You're with Bush Telegraph here on ABC Radio National. My name's Michael McKenzie. It's Friday. It's time to talk food on Friday. And for those of us who live in southern Australia, it is officially summer, has been for the last 4 days. If you live in northern Australia, it's called something else again. It's called either the build-up or the wet, depending on where you're living at the moment. But it could be a long, hot spell anywhere you're living. And while many gardens, particularly in the southern states, shrivel in the heat, there are plenty of fruits and veggies that we can put into the ground and they will thrive in the hot weather. Meredith Curtin is a well-known gardening writer. Meredith's book, Harvest, indeed shows you how to grow your own fresh produce, and she's here to tell us what we can grow in our gardens during the hot months. Meredith, welcome to Bush Telegraph.
Thank you, Michael.
Now, where do you plant, Meredith? Because you live in Sydney, but I think you plant elsewhere, don't you?
I do. I have a farm on the mid-north coast, and we go there every weekend. So I have a bit of a bizarre life. I agree. So my big vegetable garden, orchard, the whole thing is on the mid-north coast.
And so you spend 5 days a week away from the garden.
I know.
How do you make sure it... Well, I think we should get straight into this. How do we make sure
things
survive? Yes.
It's tough because, you know, I don't actually have an irrigation system or anything like that on it. And I made a conscious decision to do that. It was a case of if things don't survive, then they're not right for that climate anyway. That was my decision.
Gee, you're a toughie, aren't you?
I really am. Just ask my husband. He says, you're so hard.
You want me to eat you? You prove it that you're worthy of my chewing.
Look, I don't like the idea of mollycoddling plants.
And we
really
can't
don't.
Afford to do so. With water at a premium these days, we just can't afford it. Even if you're on tanks, of course. I'm not sure, what's the mid-north coast been like for rainfall lately?
Well, we've had some good rain recently, but, 2 months ago it was the driest I've seen it for ages.
Right.
Ages. You know, it was really... I'm in a spoilt area because we've got a good rainfall. So when I say it was the driest I'd seen it for ages, it hadn't rained for about 8 weeks.
Right. Yes,
I feel, yeah.
I'd stop complaining right now if I were you.
I will. I'll shut up.
Yeah, okay. So you took over your mother's farm. You took over your mother's farm a few years ago.
That's exactly right.
Right. And does it have a tradition, this farm, of growing veggies on it?
Oh, well, my grandfather used to grow tomatoes, actually, commercially.
Oh, tops.
Yeah, so we've got a tomato paddock.
A paddock of tomatoes.
Well, it doesn't actually have tomatoes in it anymore, but it's still called the tomato paddock.
That's nice. I love that. You've got to keep those naming traditions. So, Meredith, what has passed your stringent tests for survival?
Well, of course, all the trees, you know, I mean, when I say I don't water, I obviously don't water Monday to Friday, but I still do water all the leafy greens and things like that when we're up there. But the actual trees and things, I don't water those at all. So we've got an orchard with stone fruit and, predominantly stone fruit, but I also have quite a few nuts and mulberries and pomegranates and some other things like that.
Oh, you've got pomegranates too, because we did a whole coverage on pomegranates about 3 weeks ago, and people loved it.
Oh, they're so nice.
There's a tradition, I think, going back to some of those waves of immigration back in the 50s and the 60s and 70s of people bringing pomegranates with them and planting them, not commercially, but certainly just for their own family.
Yeah, well, I've got a China pear in the paddock down the hill as well. That's a sort of a leftover from my grandfather's days. And in his memoirs, he sort of talks about picking pears from the China pear tree on his walk through to school. So that's really nice to still see it there, you know, and when it's in flower, point out to the kids.
So some of the trees on your family property go back some time, and that's great if you've got those established, but not all of us.
Well, hardly
can start
any
like
do.
That.
Hardly any do.
Oh, really? Oh, right.
Yeah, really. Most of the orchard we planted, and we planted that 7 years ago.
Right.
And they're all coming into sort of really good cropping now. But we've been waiting patiently for, 5 years for that to finally happen.
Well, for those people, Meredith, who want to put in the stone fruit and some of the other orchard trees you've talked about, they can do that this year. That's tops. But at the same time, what can we grow this year and eat this year? What do you suggest?
Okay. So something a little bit more short term.
Yeah.
Well, everyone talks about tomatoes and how wonderful they are.
Oh, I thought it was too late.
Well, you know, you could have got them in early. And that would have been nice, but it's not too late. You can still plant right up to Christmas.
Right.
But you know what I really am just so into at the moment is all the different sorts of melons, cucumbers, zucchinis, squashes, because like even in the melons, for example, you know, you go to the shop and you buy seedless watermelon or you buy seed watermelon and there's not kind of a lot of options otherwise. But if you go to some of the heritage seed suppliers, you can get jam melons, which remind me so much of the mid-north coast. It's not funny because, you know, my grandparents making jam all the time. So you can get jam melons and sugar babies and golden ones.
Hang on, what's a sugar baby? I don't think I've ever seen a sugar baby.
Oh, like it's a nice little petite-sized watermelon. You know, it's the sort that you actually could happily consume one family in a day. You don't have to put it back in the fridge.
So same green rind, same red centre.
Yes, but a much smaller size.
Oh, I like that. That's great. Yeah. So you could have a sugar baby on the plate for breakfast.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a bit bigger than a grapefruit, but yeah.
Okay. So go to your heritage seed stores, and because you mentioned also tomatoes. I cut you off, but you were talking about some heirloom varieties as being something you can plant.
There's lots of some delicious ones, but and along in the same family as tomatoes, another thing that's just really reminds me of my childhood is going to Nana's house, my other Nana, who also was from the mid-north coast, and picking Chinese, and not Chinese gooseberries, they're kiwi fruit, but picking gooseberries, Cape gooseberries, which look just like tomatoes, like cherry tomatoes, but they're golden and they've got a real astringency to them and they've got the papery husk and you can plant all of those now, and tomatillos as well. You can get them in seed. So these are some of the more unusual things that come up each year.
You're saying things that mean nothing to me until you say them, Meredith. Tomatillos. What's a tomatillo?
Tomatillos. Well, they're in the same family as tomatoes.
Yeah.
And do you know gooseberries? Can you remember?
Yes. Gooseberries I know, but perhaps
describe them.
So
not the English gooseberries that you buy in a punnet when you buy blackberries, but the Cape gooseberries.
As in Cape, as in South Africa?
South. Yeah, exactly. Right. They look just like cherry tomatoes, but they're golden, and they come out of a papery husk. So you peel them. Mm-hmm. They're a shrub that grows to sort of about a metre, just under a metre, and they're delicious. And there is nothing nicer than warm gooseberries picked from the garden when they've still got the sun's heat in them. They're yum.
Gee, they sound great. And tomatillos. This is where a tomato has a peccadillo, is it? Sorry, that was so bad. What are they what do they look like? Well, you've got to describe them to us first.
They're more berry-like as well. So they're more the cherry tomato kind of thing, and they're same thing. They've got a little papery husk, but they come in different colours as well. So
are they good for salads?
Reds and cherries. Yes, but they're also good for fruit salads.
Oh, okay.
So they're almost a cross between, you know, a fruit and a vegetable.
Mm.
A bit like, you know, how you'd eat a tomato and sometimes say it was so sweet. It's like that. And the other thing that you could put in if you've got sort of a nice warm spot that doesn't get frost is tamarillos or the tree tomatoes, and they are so fast. You know, even though it's a perennial, even though it's there season after season, they just grow so quickly. You know, you turn your back on them and it's 6 foot tall and has 20, 30, 40 fruits all over it, dripping like beautiful, looking a bit like passion fruit, really, but they're all Roma tomatoes and they're yummy.
If you've just joined us, we're talking food porn here with Meredith Curtin about what to plant still in summer and reap the rewards on your table in the season. Meredith, when it comes to soil types, what do we need to think about there?
Oh, well, soil, you can never give up on it. You've got to just keep on working all the time. I'm afraid soil is kind of, it's a bit like a husband.
Oh, yeah.
You turn
what's
your
shallow?
No, I wasn't meaning that.
Oh, right.
I was just meaning, you know, you can't ignore it and you've got to look after it all the time. And, you know, they get sulky if they're not fed regularly.
Yes. Do you want to stop with this analogy now?
Yeah, okay,
yeah,
I think
you should, yes.
But,
and
yes.
Feed them what? I mean, I take it various types of fruit and veggies demand different kinds of nutrients, don't they?
Well, they do, but the idea is to add as much organic matter as you can, and therefore you're creating like a smorgasbord in the soil, and the plants can pick and choose what nutrients they want.
Okay.
So does that make sense?
It does.
If you just pile in lots and lots and lots and lots of organic matter, you use chicken manure as well as, you know, as well as sugarcane that you might dig through, as well as your compost, as well as your worms.
But Meredith, should you apply things like chicken manure directly? Because I thought there was high acid content.
No. Yeah. You would do that in the sort of the winter.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. All right. Because I've got goats.
Before you put in your... Well, yeah, goat as well, as long as you composted it. I think fresh goat poo could probably have a little bit too much nitrogen.
Well, I muck out their shed and I've got all the straw mixed in with, you know, their other stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then that would be fine.
Okay.
But, yeah, certainly the idea is, rather than just sort of adding, say, you know, adding your phosphorus or adding your nitrogen, rather than just doing specifically like that, as I was saying, if you try to create a smorgasbord, try to create lots and lots and lots and lots of different things that you're adding to your soil. So it's not the same thing that you're adding all the time. And if you do that, then really your plant has a smorgasbord to choose from. And so when one season you might be putting in tomatoes and they're going to be needing, you know, lots of potassium for the flower and fruit, as well as some nitrogen, they can take that. But the next season, if you're putting in carrots and they don't need that because they're not flowering fruiting plants, they've still got something in there that's really good for them. And I mean, that's all married in with crop rotation as well, that you're not putting the same things season after season that draw the same nutrients out.
Meredith, we're running out of time and I want to come back to where we began. I know, we've just begun. But I'm just wondering if we can come back to where we began on watering. If you're away for most of the week, how are you making sure that all these lovely things you described are still surviving?
Well, they get a really good drink on the weekend. That's it.
That's it.
And, you know, as I said, I've got a really good mulch. I've got an excellent mulch, loads of organic matter in the soil. And that's it. Sometimes I'll come back and things will have been jettisoned if they, you know, they'll drop their crop if they get really too hot. But the other thing is, I spend all, when I say I'm only there for the weekends, it's a bit of a furphy, because I'm there for the weekends, but then I'm there for all school holidays too. So come mid December, I'm there for 6 weeks
during those particularly dry months. So that's the
crucial
time.
That's exactly right. Yeah, they're the times also when things are cropping that I really want, you know, that's the capsicums and the eggplants and all the things that I'm, you know, the tomatoes and all the things I'm eating. So in that case, I can be a little bit, you know, I can be a bit more generous with my water.
Oh, how lovely of you. Meredith, I've enjoyed this so much. Let's get you back on again soon and talk more about veggies in the meantime.
We haven't done berries.
There's so much to do. We'll catch up again soon, hey?
All right. And if anyone wants to check out my website too, you can have a look on meredithkirtan.com.au, which is spelled MEREDITHKIRTON.
Meredith Curtin, who's the author of Harvest. That's the program for today. Thank you for the entire team and all their work. We'll catch you on Monday with Michael Cathcart.